His anger was, he knew, irrational, and there had not really been any excuse for being surly with Tenedra and the others, but he could not have helped himself. The wolf's calm acceptance of death and her mourning for her lost mate had torn at his heart, and anger kept the tears out of his eyes. The sack was awkward to carry, once he had changed form, and it kept throwing him off balance. But he stumbled on with his head held high to keep his burden from dragging on the ground. Polgara and Belgaroth were talking with the she-wolf when he reached the den again. The injured wolf had a skeptical expression in her eyes as she listened.
"She can't accept it," Polgara said. "Does she think you're lying?" Geryon asked, dropping the sack.
"Wolves don't understand the meaning of that word. She thinks we are mistaken. We are going to have to show her. She met you first, so she might trust you a little more. Change back. You will need your hands to untie the knot in that sack anyway."
"All right."
He drew his own image in his imagination and changed.
"How remarkable,"
the she-wolf said in amazement. Belgaroth looked at her sharply.
"Why did you say that?" he asked her.
"Did you not find it so?"
"I am accustomed to it. Why did you choose those particular words?"
"They came to me. I am no pack leader, and I have no need to choose my word with care in order to protect my dignity."
Geryon had opened the sack, and he laid meat and cheese on the ground in front of her. She began to eat ravenously. He knelt beside the starving pup and began to feed him, being careful to keep his fingers away from the needle-sharp teeth. "A little bit at a time," Polgara cautioned. "Don't make him sick." When the she-wolf had eaten her fill, she limped to the spring which came bubbling out from between two rocks, and drank. Geryon picked up the puppy and carried him to the spring so that he could also drink.
"You are not like the other man-things,"
the she-wolf observed.
"No," he agreed. "Not entirely."
"Are you mated?"
she asked.
"Yes." "To a wolf? Or to one of the she's of the man-things?"
"To one of the she's of this kind." He tapped his own chest.
"Ah. And does she hunt with you?"
"Our she's do not usually hunt."
"What useless things they must be,"
the wolf sniffed disdainfully.
"Not altogether."
"Durnik and the others are coming," Polgara said. Then she looked at the she-wolf.
"The others of our pack are coming to this place, little sister. They are the man-things of which I spoke. Do not be afraid of them, for they are like this one."
She pointed her nose at Geryon. "Our leader here and I will now also change our forms. The presence of wolves alarms the beasts we have with us, and they must drink from your water. If it please you, will you go with this one who fed you, so that our beasts may drink?"
"It shall be as you say,"
the she-wolf replied. Geryon led the limping wolf away from the spring, carrying the now drowsy puppy in his arms. The puppy raised his muzzle, licked Geryon's face once, and then fell asleep. Durnik and Toth set up their camp near the spring, while Eriond and Silk watered the horses and then took them back to picket them in the woods. After a while, Geryon led the now wary she-wolf toward the fire.
"It is time for you to meet the other members of our pack," he told her, "for they are now your packmates as well."
"This is not a natural thing," she said nervously, as she limped along at his side. "They will not harm you," he assured her.
Then he spoke to the others.
"Please, stand very still," he told them. "She will want to smell each of you so that she can recognize you later. Don't try to touch her, and when you speak, do it quietly. She's very nervous right now." He led the wolf around the fire, allowing her to sniff at each of his companions.
"What's her name?"
Synedra asked, as the she-wolf sniffed at her little hand. Wolves don't need names.
"We have to call her something, Garion. May I hold the puppy?"
"I think she'd rather you didn't just yet. Let her get used to you first."
"This one is your mate?"
the she-wolf said.
"I can smell your scent on her."
"Yes," Garion agreed.
"She's very small. I see now why she can't hunt. Is she fully grown?"
"Yes, she is."
"Has she had her first litter yet?"
"Yes."
"How many puppies?"
"One."
"One only?"
the wolf sniffed.
"I have had as many as six. You should have chosen a larger mate. I am sure she was the runt of her litter." "What is she saying?"
Synedra asked. "It wouldn't translate," Garion lied. After the wolf had grown a little more at ease, Polgara boiled a number of herbs in a small pot, mixed them with a paste of soap and sugar, and applied the poultice to the wolf's injured paw. Then she wrapped the paw in a clean white cloth. "Try not to lick this or chew it off, little sister," she instructed. "It will not taste good, and it needs to stay where it is to heal your hurt."
"One is grateful,"
the wolf replied. She looked into the dancing flames of the fire.
"That is a comforting thing, is it not?"
she observed. "We find it so," Bulgara said.
"You man-things are very clever with your forepaws."
"They are useful," Bulgara agreed. She took the sleeping puppy from Garion's arms and nestled him beside his mother.
"I will sleep now,"
the wolf decided. She laid her muzzle protectively on her puppy's flank and closed her eyes. Durnick motioned to Garion and led him aside.
"I think I've come up with a way to bring her along, without frightening the horses. I can make sort of a sled for her to ride in. I'll put a long enough tow rope on it to keep her smell away from them, and I'll cover her and her puppy with an old horse blanket. She might make them a little jumpy at first, but they'll get used to her."
The smith looked gravely at his friend.
"Why are we doing this, Garion?" he asked.
"I couldn't bear the thought of just leaving the two of them here. They would have both died before the week was out."
"You're a good man," Durnick said simply,
putting his hand on Garion's shoulder.
"You're decent as well as brave."
"I'm a Sindar," Garion shrugged. "We are all like that."
"But you're not actually a Sindar, you know."
"That's how I was raised, and that's all that matters, isn't it?" The sled Durnick contrived for the wolf and her puppy the next morning had wide-set runners and was built low to the ground, so there was little chance of its overturning.
"It might be better if it had wheels," he admitted. "But I don't have any wheels to work with, and it would take too long to make some."
"I'll ransack the next village we come to," Silk told him. "Maybe I can find a cart of some kind." They rode out, slowly at first, until they saw that the sled ran smoothly on the damp earth of the road, and then they moved on at their usual canter. Silk was checking a map as he rode along. "There's a fair-sized town just up ahead," he told Belgarath. "I think we could use some up-to-date information about now, don't you?"
"Why is it that you absolutely have to go into every town we pass?" Belgarath asked him.
"I'm a city dweller, Belgarath," the little man replied in an offhand manner. "I get edgy if I can't walk on cobblestones every so often. Besides, we need supplies. Garion's wolf eats a great deal. Why don't the rest of you go out in a wide circle around the place, and we will catch up with you on the other side?"
"We?"
Garion asked him.
You're coming along, aren't you? Garion sighed.
I guess so. You always seem to get into trouble if we let you go off alone.
Trouble? Silk said innocently.
Me?
Sakath rubbed at his stubbled chin.
I'll come too, he said. I don't look that much like the coins anymore.
He glared briefly at Belgarath.
How can you stand this? He demanded, scratching vigorously at his face. The itching is about to drive me wild.
You get used to it, Belgarath told him. I wouldn't feel right if my face didn't itch. The place appeared to be a market town that had at some time in the past been fortified. It crouched atop a hill, and it was surrounded by a thick stone wall with watchtowers at each corner. The pervading overcast that seemed to cover all of Darshiva made the town look gray and dismal. The gate was unguarded, and Silk, Garion, and Sakath clattered on through into what appeared to be a deserted street.
Let's see if we can find somebody, Silk said. If not, we can at least ransack a few shops for the food we'll need.
Don't you ever pay for anything, Keldar? Sakath asked him with some asperity.
Oh, not if I don't have to. No honest merchant ever passes up an opportunity to steal. Let's push on, shall we?
This is a very corrupt little man, do you know that?
Sakath said to Garion.
We have noticed that from time to time.
They rounded a corner and saw a group of men in canvas smocks loading a wagon under the direction of a sweating fat man. Silk reined in his horse.
Where are all the people, friend? He called to the fat man.
Gone. Fled to either Gandahar or Dalesia.
Fled? What for?
Where have you been, man? Urvan is coming.
Really? I hadn't heard that.
Everybody in Darshiva knows it.
Xanthromos will stop him, Silk said confidently.
Xanthromos isn't here,
the fat man suddenly bawled at one of his workers.
Be careful with that box. The things in there are breakable.
Silk led the others closer.
Where did she go? Xanthromos, I mean.
Who knows? Who cares? There's been nothing but trouble in Darshiva ever since she gained control of the country.
The fat man mopped at his face with a soiled kerchief.
You'd better not let the Grolems hear you talking like that.
Grolems,
the fat man snorted.
They were the first ones to run. Avan's army uses Darshivan Grolems for firewood.
Why would Xanthromos leave when her country is being invaded?
Who knows why she does anything?
The fat fellow looked around nervously, then spoke in a quiet voice.
Just between you and me, friend, I think she's mad. She heard some kind of ceremony at Hemel. She stuck a crown on the head of some archduke from Malsina and said that he is the Emperor of Meloria. He will be a head shorter when Kal-Zakath catches up with him, I'd wager. I'd like to put some money on the same proposition, Sakath agreed quietly. Then she gave a speech in the temple at Hemel.
The fat man went on.
She said that the day is at hand. Grolems of every stripe have been saying that the day is at hand for as long as I can remember. Every one of them seems to be talking about a different day, though. Anyway, she came through here a few days ago and told us all that she was going to the place where the new god of Angrak will be chosen. She held up her hand and said, "And this is a sign to you that I shall prevail." It gave me quite a turn at first, let me tell you. There were swirling lights under her skin. I thought for a while that there was really something significant about it, but my friend, the apothecary who keeps the shop next to mine, he told me that she is a sorceress and she can make people see anything she wants them to see. That explains it, I guess.
Did she say anything else? Silk asked him intently.
Only that this new god of hers will appear before the summer is gone.
Oh, let's hope that she's right, Silk said. That might put an end to all of this turmoil.
I doubt it, the fat man said moodily. I think we are in for a long siege of trouble.
Was she alone? Geryon asked him.
No. She had her bogus emperor with her, and that white-eyed Grolem from the temple at Himmel, the one who follows her around like a tame ape.
Anyone else?
Only a little boy. I don't know where she picked him up. Just before she left, she told us that the army of Irvon the Disciple was coming, and she ordered the whole populace to go out and block his path. Then she left, going that way.
He pointed off toward the west.
Well, my friends and I, we all sort of looked at each other for a while. Then everybody grabbed up whatever he could carry and bolted. We are not stupid enough to throw ourselves in the path of an advancing army, no matter who orders us to.
How is it that you stayed behind? Silk asked him curiously.
This is my shop, the fat man replied in a plaintive tone. I've worked all my life to build it up. I wasn't going to run off and let the riffraff from the gutters loot it. Now they're all gone, so it's safe for me to make a run for it with whatever I can salvage. A lot of what I'll have to leave behind won't keep anyway, so I'm not losing very much.
Oh, Silk said, his pointed nose twitching with interest. What is it you deal in, friend?
General merchandise.
The fat man looked critically at his workmen.
Stack those boxes closer together, he shouted. There's still a lot left to go in that wagon.
What sort of general merchandise? Silk pressed.
Household goods, tools, bolts of cloth, foodstuffs, that sort of thing.
Well, now, Silk said, his nose twitching even more violently. Maybe you and I can do some business. My friends and I have a long way to go, and we are running a little short of supplies. You mentioned foodstuffs. What sort of foodstuffs? The merchant's eyes narrowed.
Bread, cheese, butter, dried fruit, hams. We've even got a fresh side of beef. I warn you, though, those things are going to cost you very dearly. Food is very scarce in this part of Dersheba.
Oh, Silk said blandly. I don't think they'll cost all that much, unless you plan to wait here to greet Irvon when he arrives. The merchant stared at him in consternation. You see, my friend, Silk continued, you have to leave, and very soon, I think. That wagon of yours won't carry everything you've got in your shop, and your team isn't going to be able to move very fast, not the way you are loading the wagon. My friends and I have fast horses, though, so we can afford to wait a little longer. After you leave, we might just browse through your shop for the things we need. The merchant's face went suddenly very pale.
That's robbery, he gasped.
Why, yes, Silk admitted blandly. I believe some people do call it that. He paused for a moment to allow the merchant time to understand the situation fully. The fat man's face grew anguished. Then Silk sighed. Unfortunately,
I am cursed with a delicate conscience. I can't bear the thought of cheating an honest man, unless I absolutely have to.
He lifted a pouch from his belt, opened it, and peered inside.
I seem to have 8 or 10 silver half-crown in here, he said. What would you say to 5 of them, for everything my friends and I can carry?
That's outrageous, the merchant spluttered.
With some show of regret, Silk closed the pouch and tucked it away under his belt.
I guess we'll just have to wait, then. Do you think you and your men will be much longer?
You're robbing me,
the merchant wailed.
No, not really. The way I see it, what we have here is a buyer's market.
That's my offer, friend. 5 silver half-crowns. Take it, or leave it. We will wait over there across the street while you decide.
He turned his horse and led Geryon and Zakath toward a large house on the other side of the street. Zakath was trying very hard to stifle a laugh as they dismounted.
We're not quite done yet, Silk muttered. It needs just one more little touch.
He went up to the locked door of the house, reached into his boot, and took out a long, pointed needle. He probed at the lock for a moment, and it snapped open with a solid-sounding click.
We will need the table and 3 chairs, he told them. Bring them out. Set them up in front of the house. I will rummage around and find the other things we'll need.
He went into the house. Geryon and Zakath went into the kitchen and carried out a fair-sized table. Then they went back for chairs.
What is he up to?
Zakath asked with a look of bafflement on his face.
He's playing,
Geryon said with a certain disgust. He does that from time to time during his business dealings. They carried out the chairs and found Silk waiting for them. Several bottles of wine and 4 goblets sat on the table.
All right, gentlemen, the little Drasnian said. Seat yourselves and have some wine. I'll be right back. I want to check on something I saw at the side of the house.
He went around the corner and came back after a few minutes with a broad smirk on his face. He sat, poured himself a goblet of wine, leaned back in his chair, and put his feet up on the table with the air of a man planning to make a long stay of it.
I give him about 5 minutes, he said.
Who?
Geryon asked.
The merchant, Silk shrugged. He will only be able to watch us sitting here for so long, and then he will start to see things my way.
You are a cruel, cruel man, Prince Skeldar,
Zakath laughed.
Business is business, Silk replied, taking a sip of his wine. This really isn't bad, you know, he said, holding up his goblet to admire the color of the wine.
What were you doing around at the side?
Geryon asked him.
There's a carriage house there, with a large lock on the door. You don't flee a town and lock a door unless there is something valuable behind it, do you? And besides, locked doors always pique my curiosity.
So what was inside?
Rather a nice little cabriolet, actually.
What's a cabriolet?
A 2-wheeled carriage.
And you are going to steal it?
Of course. I told the merchant over there that we would take only what we could carry. I didn't tell him how we were going to carry it. Besides, Durnik wanted wheels to make something to carry your wolf in. That little carriage could save him all of the trouble of building things. Friends should always help their friends, right?
As Silk had predicted, the merchant can only bear watching the 3 of them lounging at the table across from his shop for just so long. As his men finished loading the wagon, he came across the street.
All right, he said sullenly. 5 half-crowns, but only so much as you can carry, mind.
Oh, trust me, Silk told him, counting out the coins on the table. Would you care for a glass of wine? It's already quite good. The merchant snatched up the coins and turned without answering. We'll lock up for you when we leave, Silk called after him. The fat man did not look back. After the merchant and his men had ridden off down the street, Silk led his horse around to the side of the house while Agarian and Zakath crossed the street to plunder the fat man's shop. The little two-wheeled carriage had a folding top and a large leather-covered box across its back. Silk's saddle horse looked a bit uncomfortable between the shafts of the carriage, and the sense of being followed by the wheeled thing definitely made him nervous. The box across the back of the cabriolet held an astonishing amount of supplies. They filled it with cheeses, rolls of butter, hams, slabs of bacon, and several bags of beans. Then they filled up the empty spaces with loaves of bread. When Garion picked up a large bag of meal, however, Silk firmly shook his head. No, he said adamantly. Why not? You know what Polgara makes with ground meal. I'm not deliberately going to volunteer to eat gruel for breakfast every morning for the next month. Let's get that side of beef instead.
We won't be able to eat all of that before it goes bad, Garion objected.
We have these two mouths to feed, remember. I have seen your wolf and her puppy eat. The meat won't have time to go bad, believe me.
They rode out of town with Silk idly lounging in the seat of the little carriage with the reins held negligently in his left hand. In his right, he held a wine bottle.
Now, this is more like it, he said happily, taking a long drink.
I'm glad you are enjoying yourself, Garion said a little tartly.
Oh, I am, Silk replied. But after all, Garion, fair is fair. I stole it. So I get to ride in it.
Chapter 22 The others were clustered in the yard of an abandoned farmstead a league or so beyond the town.
I see you've been busy, Belgarath observed, as Silk drove the little carriage up and stopped.
We needed something to carry the supplies in, Silk replied glibly.
Of course.
I hope you were able to find something beside beans, Zadi said. Soldiers' rations tend to grow monotonous after a while.
Silk swindled a shopkeeper, Garion said, opening the leather-covered box at the back of the carriage. We did rather well, actually.
Swindled? Silk protested.
Didn't you?
Garion moved the side of beef so that Polgara could look into the box.
Well, I suppose so, Silk admitted. But swindled is such an awkward way to sum up.
It's perfectly all right, Prince Skaldar, Polgara almost purred as she took a mental inventory of the items in the box. To be honest with you, I don't care how you came by all of this.
He bowed. My pleasure, Polgara, he said grandly.
Yes, she said absently. I'm sure you enjoyed it.
What did you find out? Belden asked Garion.
Well, for one thing, Sandra Moss is ahead of us again, Garion replied. She went through here a few days ago. She knows that Irvon's army is coming down through the mountains. He might be moving a little faster than we thought, though, because she's ordering the civilian population to delay him. They are more or less ignoring her.
Wise decision, Belden grunted. Anything else?
She told them that this is all going to be settled before the summer's over.
That agrees with what Saradus told us at Ashabah. Belgarath said. All right, then. We all know when the meeting's going to happen. The only thing that's left to find out is where.
That's why we're all in such a hurry to get to Kel, Belden said. Saradus is sitting on that information like a mother hen on a clutch of eggs.
What is it?
Belgareth burst out irritably. What's what?
I'm missing something. It's something important. It's something you told me.
I've told you lots of things, Belgareth. You don't usually listen, though.
This was a while back. It seems to me we were sitting in my tower talking.
We've done that from time to time over the last several thousand years.
No, this was more recent. Eriond was there, and he was just a boy.
That would put it at about 10 years or so ago, then.
Right.
What were we doing 10 years ago?
Belgareth began to pace up and down, scowling.
I had been helping Dernick. We were making Poledra's cottage livable. You had been here in Meloria.
Belden scratched reflectively at his stomach.
I think I remember the time. We were sharing a cask of ale you had stolen from the twins, and Ariond was scrubbing the floor.
What were you telling me?
Belden shrugged.
I'd just come back from Meloria. I was describing conditions here and telling you about the Sardian, although we didn't know very much about it at that point.
No, no, Belgareth shook his head. That wasn't it. You said something about Kel.
Belden frowned, thinking back.
It must not have been very important, because neither of us seems to be able to remember it.
Seems to me it was just something you said in passing.
I say a lot of things in passing. They help to fill up the blank spaces in a conversation. Are you certain it was all that important?
Belgareth nodded.
I am sure of it.
All right. Let's see if we can track it down.
Won't this wait, Father?
Polgara asked. No, Paul. I don't think so. We are right on the edge of it, and I don't want to lose it again.
Let's see, Belden said,
his ugly face creased with thought.
I came in, and you and Ariond were cleaning. You offered me some of the ale you had stolen from the twins. You asked me what I had been doing since Belgarion's wedding, and I told you I'd been keeping an eye on the Angorax.
Yes, Belgareth agreed. I remember that part.
I told you that the Murgos were in general despair about the death of Targus, and that the Western Grolems had gone to pieces over the death of Torak.
Then you told me about Zakath's campaign in Tormurgos, and about how he had added the Cowl to his name.
That actually wasn't my idea, Zakath said with a slightly pained look. Bredor came up with it, as a means of unifying Maloyan society.
He made a wry face.
It didn't really work all that well, I guess.
How things do seem a bit disorganized here, Silk agreed.
What did we talk about then? Belgareth asked.
Well, Belden replied, as I remember it, we told Ariond the story of Omimbre, and then you asked me what was going on in Meloria. I told you that things were all pretty much the same, that the bureaucracy's the glue that holds everything together, that there were plots and intrigues in Malcina and Malzeth, that Coranda and Darshiva and Gandahar were on the very verge of open rebellion, and that the Grolems...
He stopped, his eyes suddenly going very wide.
"Are still afraid to go near Kel,"
Belgareth completed in a shout of triumph.
"That's it!"
Belden smacked his forehead with his open palm.
"How could I have been so stupid?" he exclaimed.
Then he fell over on his back, howling with laughter and kicking at the ground in sheer delight.
"We've got her, Belgareth!" he roared. "We've got them all! Zandramas, Irvon, even Agacek! They can't go to Kel!
Belgarath was also laughing uproariously.
How did we miss it?
Father, Polgara said ominously, this is beginning to make me cross. Will one of you please explain all of this hysteria?
Belden and Belgarath were capering hand in hand in a grotesque little dance of glee.
Will you two stop that? Polgara snapped.
Oh, this is just too rare, Paul,
Belden gasped, catching her in a bear hug. Don't do that. Just talk.
Oh, right, Paul, he said,
wiping the tears of mirth from his eyes.
Kel is the holy place of the Dals. It's the center of their whole culture.
Yes, uncle, I know that.
When the Angorax overran Talasia, the Grolems came in to erase the Dalesian religion and to replace it with the worship of Torak, the same way they did in Karanda. When they found out the significance of Kel, they moved to destroy it. The Dals had to prevent that. So they put their wizards to work on the problem. The wizards laid curses on the entire region around Kel.
He frowned.
Maybe curses isn't the right word, he admitted. Enchantments might be closer, but it amounts to the same thing. Anyway, since the Grolems were the real danger to Kel, the enchantments were directed at them. Any Grolem who tries to approach Kel is struck blind.
Why didn't you tell us about this earlier? She asked him tartly.
I've never really paid that much attention to it. I probably even forgot about it. I don't bother to go into Dalesia because the Dals are all mystics and mysticism has always irritated me. The seers all talk in riddles, and necromancy seems like a waste of time to me. I wasn't even sure if the enchantments really worked. Grolems are very gullible sometimes. A suggestion of a curse would probably work just as well as a real one.
You know, Belgarath mused, I think the reason we missed it was because we've been concentrating on the fact that Ervan, Zandramas, and Agachak are all sorcerers. We kept overlooking the fact that they are also Grolems.
Is this curse, or whatever you call it, aimed specifically at the Grolems?
Garion asked.
Or would it affect us too?
Belden scratched at his beard.
It's a good question, Belgarath. That's not the sort of thing you'd want to risk lightly.
Senje,
Belgarath snapped his fingers.
I didn't quite follow that.
Senje went to Kel, remember? And even as inept as he is still a sorcerer.
Well, that's it then, Belden grinned. We can go to Kel, and they can't. They'll have to follow us for a change.
What about the demons?
Durnick asked soberly.
The house is already marching toward Kel, and as far as we know, Zandramas has Morja with her. Will they be able to go to Kel? What I'm getting at is that even if Ervan and Zandramas can't go there, couldn't they just send the demons instead to get the information for them?
Belden shook his head.
It wouldn't do them any good. Saradus won't let a demon anywhere near her copy of the Malorian Gospels. No matter what other faults they have, the seers refuse to have anything to do with the agents of chaos.
Could she prevent either of the demons from just taking what they want, though?
Durnick looked worried.
Let's face it, Belden. A demon is a fairly awful thing.
She can take care of herself, Belden replied. Don't worry about Saradus.
Master Belden, Sakath objected. She's little more than a child, and with her eyes bound like that, she is utterly helpless.
Belden laughed coarsely.
Helpless? Saradus? Man, are you out of your mind? She could probably stop the sun if she needed to, We can't even begin to make guesses about how much power she has.
I don't understand.
Sakath looked baffled. Saradus is the focus of all of the power of her race, Sakath, Polgara explained. Not only the power of the Dals who are presently alive, but also that of all of them who have ever lived.
Or who might live in the future, for all we know, Belgarath added.
That's an interesting idea, Belden said. We might want to discuss it some day. Anyway, he continued to Sakath, Saradus can do just about anything she has to do to make sure the final meeting takes place at the correct time and the correct place. Demons aren't a part of that meeting, so she'll probably just ignore them, and if they get too troublesome, she'll just send them back where they came from.
Can you do that?
Belden shook his head.
But she can.
I think so, yes.
I'm having a little trouble with all of this, Silk admitted. If none of the Grolems can go to Kel without going blind, and if the demons aren't going to find out anything, even if they do go there, why are they all running toward it, and what good is it going to do them?
They are putting themselves into a position where they can follow us when we come out, Belgarath replied. They know we can go there, and that we will find out where the meeting is going to take place. They probably plan to tag along behind when we leave.
That's going to make it very nervous. When we leave Kel, isn't it? We'll have half the Grolems in the world right behind us.
Everything will work out, Silk,
Belgarath replied confidently. Fatalism does not fill me with confidence at this point, old man, Silk said acidly. Belgarath's expression became almost beatific.
Trust me, he said.
Silk glared at him, threw his arms in the air, and then stomped away, swearing under his breath.
You know, I've been wanting to do that to him for years, the old man chuckled, his blue eyes twinkling. I think it was actually worth the wait. All right, let's get things together again and move on.
They transferred some of the supplies from the box across the back of the little carriage to the pack horses, and then Durnick stood considering the vehicle thoughtfully.
It's not going to work, he said.
What's wrong with it? Silk asked him, a bit defensively.
The horse has to be hitched between those shafts. If we put the wolf on the seat, she'll be right behind him. He'll bolt at that point. Nothing could stop him.
I suppose I didn't think of that, Silk said glumly.
It's the smell of the wolf that sends horses into such a panic, isn't it?
Velvet asked.
That and the snapping and snarling, Durnick replied.
Belgarian can persuade her not to snap and snarl.
What about the smell? Silk asked.
I'll take care of that.
She went to one of the packs and removed a small glass bottle.
I expect you to buy me some more of this, Prince Keldar, she said firmly. You stole the wrong kind of carriage, so it's up to you to replace what I have to use to smooth over your blunder.
What is it? He asked suspiciously.
Perfume, Keldar. And it's dreadfully expensive.
She looked at Garion, her smile dimpling her cheeks.
I will need you to translate for me. I would not want the wolf to misunderstand when I start to sprinkle this on her.
Of course. When the two of them returned from the sled-like contraption the wolf and her puppy were riding in, they found Sinedra firmly ensconced on the front seat of the smart little carriage.
This will do very nicely, Prince Keldar, she said brightly. Thank you ever so much.
But...
Was there something?
She asked, her eyes wide. Silk's expression grew surly, and he wandered away, muttering to himself.
His mourning has taken a turn for the worse,
hasn't it? Zakath observed to Geryon.
He's doing all right, Geryon replied.
He's got all the entertainment out of cheating that merchant and stealing the carriage. He gets unbearable if he has too many successes in a row. Sinetra and Lizelle usually manage to let the air out of him, though.
You mean they cooked all that up between them?
They didn't have to. They've been doing it for so long now that they don't even have to discuss it anymore.
Do you think Lizelle's perfume will work?
Well, there's one way to find out, Geryon said. They transferred the injured wolf from the sled to the front seat of the two-wheeled carriage and dabbed some perfume on the bridge of the horse's nose. Then they stepped back and looked closely at the horse while Sinedra held the reins tightly. The horse looked a bit suspicious, but did not panic. Geryon went back for the puppy and deposited him in Sinedra's lap. She smiled, patted the she-wolf on the head, and shook the reins gently.
"That's really unfair," Silk complained to Geryon as they all moved out in the Raven Queen's wake.
"Did you want to share that seat with the she-wolf?" Geryon asked him. Silk frowned.
"I hadn't thought of that, I guess," he admitted.
"She wouldn't really bite me, though, would she?"
"I don't think so. But then, you never know with wolves."
"I think I'll stay where I am, then."
"That might be a good idea."
"Aren't you just a little worried about Sinedra? That wolf could eat her in two bites."
"No, she won't do that. She knows that Sinedra's my mate, and she sort of likes me."
"Sinedra's your wife," Silk shrugged. "If the wolf bites her in two, I suppose Polgara could put her back together again."
As they started out, a thought came to Geryon. He rode forward and fell in beside Zakath.
"You are the Emperor of Meloria, right?"
"How nice of you to notice finally," Zakath replied dryly.
"Then how is it that you didn't know about that curse Belden was talking about?"
"As you may have noticed, Geryon, I pay very little attention to the Grolems. I knew that most of them would not go there. But I thought it was just a superstition of some kind."
"A good ruler tries to know everything he can about his kingdom," Geryon said, then realized how priggish that sounded. "Sorry, Zakath," he apologized. "That didn't come out exactly the way I'd intended it to."
"Geryon," Zakath said patiently, "your kingdom's a small island. I'd imagine you know most of your subjects personally."
"Well, a lot of them by sight anyway."
"I thought you might. You know their problems, their dreams, and their hopes. And you take a personal interest in them."
"Well, yes, I suppose I do."
"You are a good king. Probably one of the best in the world. But it is very easy to be a good king when your kingdom is so small. You have seen my empire, though. Part of it, anyway. And I'm sure you have at least some idea of how many people live here. It would be utterly impossible for me to be a good king. That is why I'm an emperor instead."
"And a god?"
Geryon asked slyly. "No. I'll leave that particular delusion to Irvan and Zandramas. People's wits seem to slip a bit when they aspire to divinity. And believe me, I need all my wits about me. I found that out after I had wasted half my life trying to destroy Taurogas."
"Geryon, dear,"
Sinedra called from the carriage.
"Yes? Could you come back here a moment? The wolf is whimpering a little, and I don't know how to ask her what the trouble is."
"I'll be right back," Geryon said to Zakath.
turning Gretchen around and trotting back to the carriage. Sinedra sat in the carriage with the wolf pup in her lap. The little creature lay blissfully on his back with all four paws in the air while she scratched his furry tummy. The she-wolf lay on the seat beside her. The wolf's ears were twitching and her eyes were mournful.
"Are you in pain?" Geryon asked her. "Does this she of yours always talk this much?"
she whined. It was impossible to lie, and evasion was almost as much out of the question.
"Yes," he admitted. "Can you make her stop?"
"I can try." He looked at Sinedra. "The wolf is very tired," he told her. "She wants to go to sleep."
"I'm not stopping her."
"You've been talking to her," he pointed out gently.
"I was only trying to make friends with her, Geryon."
"You are already friends. She likes you. Now, let her go to sleep." Sinedra pouted.
"I won't bother her,"
she said, sounding a bit injured.
"I'll talk to the puppy instead."
"He's tired, too."
"How can they be so tired in the daytime?"
"Wolves usually hunt at night. This is their normal sleeping time."
"Oh, I didn't know that. All right, Geryon. Tell her that I'll be quiet while they sleep."
"Little sister," he said to the wolf, "she promises not to talk to you if your eyes are closed." The wolf gave him a puzzled look.
"She will think you're sleeping."
The wolf managed to look shocked.
"Is it possible, in the language of the man-things, to say that which is not truth?"
"Sometimes."
"How remarkable." "Very well. If it is the rule of the pack, I will do this. It is, however, very unnatural."
"Yes, I know."
"I will close my eyes,"
the wolf said.
"I will keep them closed all day, if it will keep her from chattering at me."
She let out a long sigh and closed her eyes.
"Is she asleep?"
Sinedra whispered.
"I think so,"
Geryon whispered back. Then he turned and rode back to the head of the column. The countryside grew more hilly and broken as they rode west. Although the overcast continued to be as heavy as before, there appeared to be some hint of light along the western horizon as afternoon progressed. They clattered across a stone bridge that arched over a tumbling stream.
"It smells clean, Belgarath," Dernick said. "I think it's coming down out of the mountains."
Belgarath squinted up the gully from which the stream emerged. "Why don't you have a look?" he suggested. "See if there's a place to make camp. Good water has been hard to find, so let's not pass any up."
"I was thinking the same thing myself."
Then the smith and his towering mute friend rode off upstream. They set up camp for the night several hundred yards up the gully, where a bend in the stream had opened out a kind of curved gravel bench. After they had watered the horses and set up the tents, Polgara began cooking supper. She cut steaks from the side of beef and made a thick soup of dried peas, seasoned with chunks of ham. Then she set a large loaf of dark peasant bread near the fire to warm, humming to herself all the while. As always, cooking seemed to satisfy some deep-seated need in her. The supper which came from her fire that evening was of near-banquet proportions, and evening was settling in as they finished eating and leaned back contentedly.
"Very good, Paul," Belden belched. "I guess you haven't lost your touch after all."
"Thank you, Uncle," she smiled. Then she looked at Ariand. "Don't get too comfortable," she told him. "At least not until you have finished helping with the dishes." Ariand sighed and took a bucket down to the stream for water. "That used to be my job," Geryon told Zakath.
I'm glad there's someone younger along this time.
Isn't that women's work?
Would you like to tell her that?
Ah, now that you mention it, perhaps not.
You learn very fast, Zakath.
I don't believe I've ever washed a dish. Not in my entire life.
I've washed enough for both of us. And I wouldn't say that too loudly. She might decide that it's time for you to learn how.
Geryon gave Polgara a speculative sidelong glance.
Let's go feed the wolf and her puppy, he suggested. Idleness in others irritates Aunt Paul for some reason, and she can almost always think of things for people to do.
Geryon, dear,
Polgara said sweetly as they rose,
after the dishes are done, we will need water for bathing.
Yes, Aunt Paul, he said automatically. You see, he muttered to the Emperor of Meloria, I knew we hadn't moved quite fast enough.
Do you always do what she asks? And does she mean me to?
Geryon sighed.
Yes, he replied. On both counts.
They rose early the next morning, and Belden soared off to scout on ahead, while the rest ate breakfast, struck camp, and saddled their horses. The damp, sullen chill which had hovered over this desolate countryside was now edged with a drier kind of cold as the prevailing wind swept down from the summits of the Dalesian Mountains. Geryon pulled his cloak about him and rode on. They had gone only a league or so when Belden spiraled down out of the overcast sky.
"I think you'd better turn south," he advised. "Irvon's just ahead, and his whole army's right behind him."
Belgarath swore.
Well, "there's more," the hunchback told him. "The Darshevans managed to get past Ateska, or through him. They're coming up from behind. The elephants are leading the march. We are right between two armies here."
"How far ahead of us is Irvon?"
Belgarath asked him.
6 or 8 leagues. He's in the foothills of the mountains.
And how far behind us are the elephants?
About 5 leagues. It looks to me as if they're going to try to cut Irvon's column off. There's no help for it, Belgarath. We are going to have to run. We have to get out of the middle of this before the fighting starts.
Is Ateska pursuing Zandramas's army?
Zakath asked intently.
No. I think he followed your orders and pulled back to the enclave on the bank of the Magnan.
Belgarath was still swearing. How did Irvon get this far south so fast? He muttered.
He's killing his troops by the score, Belden replied. He's making them run, and Nahas has his demons whipping them along.
I guess we don't have any choice, Belgarath said. We will have to go south. Toth, will you be able to lead us to Kel if we go into the mountains down near the border of Gandahar?
The big mute nodded, then gestured to Durnik.
It's going to be more difficult, though, the smith translated. The mountains are very rugged down there, and there's still a lot of snow at the higher elevations.
We'll lose a lot of time, Grandfather, Geryon said.
Not as much as we will lose if we get caught in the middle of a battle. All right, let's go south.
In a moment, Father,
Polgara said.
Zenedra, she called. Come up here.
Zenedra shook her reins and drove her carriage up to where they stood. Polgara quickly explained the situation to her.
Now then, she said, we need to know exactly what they are doing and what they are planning to do, both armies. I think it is time for you to use my sister's amulet.
Why didn't I think of that? Belgarath said, sounding a bit embarrassed.
You were too busy trying to remember all the swear words you've ever heard, Belden suggested.
Can you do that, and drive the carriage at the same time?
Polgara asked the little queen.
I can try, Lady Polgara,
Tsinedra sounded a little dubious. She lifted the sleeping puppy out of her lap and laid him beside his mother.
"Let's move out," Belgarath said.
They turned off the road and jolted across an open field through long, dead grass. After they had gone a short distance, Tsinedra called to Bulgara.
"It's not working, Lady Bulgara. I need both hands on the reins of this rough ground."
They reined in.
"It's not that big a problem," Velvet said. "I will lead the carriage horse, and Tsinedra can concentrate on what she is doing."
"It's a little dangerous, Lizelle," Belgarath objected. "If that carriage horse shies, he will jerk you out of the saddle and the carriage will run right over you."
"Have you ever seen me fall off of a horse, ancient one? Don't worry, I'll be perfectly fine."
She rode over to the carriage horse and took hold of his reins. They started out slowly and then gradually picked up speed. Bulgara rode beside the carriage, and Tsinedra, a little frown of concentration on her face, kept her hand on the amulet chained about her throat.
"Anything?"
Bulgara asked.
"I'm hearing a lot of random conversation, Lady Bulgara,"
the little queen replied.
"There are great numbers of people out there. Wait a minute. I think I have pinpointed Nahas. That's not the sort of a voice you forget."
She frowned.
"I think he's talking to Urvan's generals. They have had the hounds out, so they know the elephants are coming."
"Will you be able to come back to them?" Belgarath asked her.
"I think so. Once I find somebody, I can usually locate him again fairly quickly."
"Good. See if you can find out if the Darshivan generals know that Urvan is just ahead of them. If there is going to be a battle, I want to know exactly where it's going to happen."
Tsinedra turned slightly, her amulet clenched tightly in her fist. She closed her eyes. After a moment, she opened them.
"I do wish they would be still," she fretted.
"Who?"
Silk asked her.
"The elephant herders. They babble worse than the old women. Wait, there they are. I've got them now."
She listened for a few moments as the carriage jolted along over the rough ground.
"The Rajivan officers are very worried," she reported. "They know that Irvan's army is somewhere in the mountains, but they don't know his exact location. None of their scouts came back to report."
"The hounds are probably seeing to that," Silk said. "What are the Darshivans planning?" Belgarath asked.
"They're undecided. They're going to push on cautiously and send out more scouts."
"All right. Now we'll see if you can go back to Nahas."
"I'll try."
She closed her eyes again.
"Oh, that's revolting,"
she exclaimed after a moment.
"What is it, dear?" Bulgara asked her.
"The Karans have found a narrow gorge. They're going to lure the elephants into it and then roll boulders and burning bushes down on them from the top."
She listened for a few moments longer.
"Once they have eliminated the elephants, the whole army is going to charge down out of the foothills and attack the rest of the Darshivans."
"Is Irvan there?"
Belden asked, his eyes intent.
"No. He is off to the side someplace. He's raving."
"I think you had better go find that gorge," Belgarath told the dwarf. "That's where the battle's going to be, and I want to be sure it's behind us, and not on up ahead somewhere."
"Right," Belden agreed, crouching and spreading his arms. "Keep in touch,"
he suggested, even as he began to change form. They rode along at a careful walk, and Geryon buckled on his shield.
"Do you really think that's going to help if we run into an entire army?"
Zarkath asked him. "It may not help much, but it won't hurt."
Bulgarath rode now with his face lifted toward the murky sky. Geryon could feel the old man's thought reaching out.
"Not so loud, father," Bulgara cautioned. "We have got Grolems all around us."
"Good," he replied. "None of them will be able to tell who is making the noise,
They will all think it's just another Grolem.
They rode on slowly, with all of them watching the old sorcerer.
North, he exploded finally. Belden has found the gorge where the ambush is. It is behind us. A little hard riding now, and we will be completely clear of both armies.
Why don't we just sort of step right along, then? Silk suggested.
Chapter 23. They galloped south through the desolate countryside of western Darsheva, with Velvet once again leading Zinedra's horse. The little queen clung to the side of the carriage with one hand, and kept the other on her amulet.
The Darshivans still don't know that Irwan's waiting in the ambush for them, she called.
I'd imagine they'll find out before too long, Silk called back.
How far is it to the border of Gandahar? Geryon asked Zakath.
I would guess about 20 leagues.
Grandfather, do we really have to go that far south?
Probably not, the old man replied. Belden's on up ahead. As soon as we are well past Irvan's scouts, he'll lead us up into the mountains. I don't have any particular urge to explore Gandahar, do you?
Not really, no. They rode on. The overcast grew perceptibly thicker, and Geryon felt the first drops of a chill rain striking his face. They crested a hill, and Belgarath rose in his stirrups, the better to see what lay ahead.
There, he said, pointing. He's circling.
Geryon peered out across the shallow valley on the far side of the hill. A solitary bird, hardly more than a minuscule black speck in the distance, swung almost lazily in the air. They plunged down the hill, and the bird veered and flew off toward the west with slow strokes of his wings. They turned and followed. The intermittent rain turned to a chilly drizzle, obscuring the surrounding countryside with its filmy haze.
"Don't you just love to ride in the rain?" Silk said with heavy irony.
"Under the circumstances, yes," Zadi replied. "Rain's not quite as good as fog, but it does cut down the visibility, and there are all manner of people looking for us."
"You've got a point there," Silk admitted, pulling his cloak tighter about him.
The terrain grew increasingly rugged, with outcroppings of weathered stone jutting up out of the ground. After about a half hour of hard riding, Belden led them into a shallow gully. They rode on, and the gully walls grew progressively steeper and higher. Soon they were riding up a narrow rocky ravine. It was mid-afternoon by now, and they were all thoroughly soaked. Geryon wiped his face and peered ahead. The sky to the west appeared to be growing lighter, giving promise of clearing. He had perhaps not even been aware of how much the prevailing gloom hanging over Darsheva had depressed him. He urged Kretchen into a run. Somehow he seemed to feel that once they reached the sunlight again, they would be safe. He rounded a bend in a ravine, and saw Belden standing in the trail ahead of them. The dwarf's matted hair hung in scraggly wet strands about his shoulders, and his beard was dripping.
"You'd better slow down," he growled at them. "I could hear you coming for a mile, and we're not alone in these foothills."
Regretfully, Geryon reined Kretchen in.
"Exactly where does this ravine lead?" Belgarath asked the hunchback.
"It twists and turns a lot, but eventually it opens out onto a ridge top. The ridge runs north and south. If we follow it north, we'll come to the main caravan route. That's the fastest way down into Delasia."
"Everybody else knows that, too."
"Well, that's all right. We'll be at least a day ahead of them. They still have a battle to fight."
"Are you going to scout ahead again?"
"Not until the rain lets up. My feathers are wet.
It would take a derrick to get me off the ground again. Oh, one other thing. When we get to that ridge, we're going to have to be careful. A couple of leagues north, it runs just a few miles above the spot where Nahaz has his ambush set up.
Your choice of a route leaves a lot to be desired, Belgarath said. If someone down there happens to look up, we'll have half of Irvan's army all over us.
Not unless they can fly. An earthquake went through here a few thousand years ago, and it sliced off the side of that ridge. It's a very steep cliff now.
How high?
High enough. 1,000 feet or so.
How far is it to the caravan route?
About 15 leagues from the place where we'll come out on that ridge.
North of Irvan's army, then?
Quite a bit north, yes.
Why did Nahaz pass it by? Why didn't he just turn west?
He probably didn't want the Darshevans and their elephants coming up behind him. Besides, he's a demon. I'd guess he just couldn't bring himself to pass up the chance for a mass slaughter.
Maybe. Do you think the battle's going to start this afternoon?
I doubt it. Elephants don't move all that fast, and the Darshevans are moving cautiously. They'll stop for the night soon. First thing tomorrow morning, though, things are going to start getting noisy.
Maybe we can get past the place where the ambush is set up during the night.
I wouldn't advise it. You won't be able to light any torches, and that cliff's a sheer drop. If you ride off the edge of it, you'll bounce all the way back to the Magan.
Belgarath grunted. Are you sure you can't fly?
Not a chance. Right now you couldn't get me into the air with a catapult.
Why don't you change into a duck?
Why don't you mind your own business?
All right, Geryon, Belgarath said with some resignation. I guess it is up to us then.
He slid down out of his saddle and walked on up the ravine. Geryon sighed, dismounted, and followed him. They ranged out ahead, searching the soggy terrain with their ears and noses. It was almost evening when the walls of the ravine began to fan out, and they could see the line of the ridge top ahead. They reached it and loped north through the gradually diminishing drizzle.
Grandfather, Geryon said. I think that's a cave over there.
He pointed with his muzzle at an opening in the rock.
Let's look.
The opening of the cave was narrow, not much more than a wide crack, and the cavern did not open up noticeably inside. It was deep, however, running far back into the rock. It seemed more like a long corridor than a room.
What do you think?
Geryon asked, as the two of them stood at the entrance, peering back into the darkness.
It's a place to get in out of the weather, and it is a good place to hide for the night. Go get the others, and I'll see if I can get a fire started.
Geryon turned and loped back down the ridge. The rain was definitely slacking off now, but the wind was coming up and it was getting colder. The others were coming warily up out of the ravine when Geryon reached them.
Another cave, Silk said plaintively, when Geryon told them what he and Belgarath had found.
I'll hold your hand, Keldar,
Velvet offered.
Oh, I appreciate the gesture, Lysel, but I don't think it's going to help very much. I loathe caves.
Some day you will have to tell me why.
No, I don't think so. I don't like to talk about it. I don't even like to think about it.
Geryon led them to the narrow track atop the ridge. Synedra's carriage jolted over the rocky ground. The smug look that had come over her face when she had expropriated the vehicle had evaporated, and she rode with resignation, wincing at every bump.
That's not much of a cave, Belden said critically, when they reached the opening in the rock.
Feel free to sleep outside, Belgarath told him.
We're going to have to put blinders on the horses to get them inside.
Durnick noted. They'll take one look at that opening and flatly refuse even to try it.
I feel much the same way myself, Silk said. Sometimes it is surprising just how intelligent horses really are.
We're not going to be able to get the carriage inside, Zadi said.
We can cover it with tent canvas and sprinkle dirt over it, Durnick said. It won't really be visible, at least not in the dark.
Let's get started, Belgareth said. I think we want to be inside before it gets much darker.
It took the better part of half an hour to get the bulky horses into the narrow cave. Then Durnick covered the entrance with tent canvas and went back outside to help Eriond and Toth conceal the carriage. The she-wolf had limped into the cave, followed by her frolicsome pup. Now that he was being fed regularly, the previously listless animal had turned playful. His mother, too, Geryon noted, had begun to fill out again, and her fur was glossy and less matted.
"An excellent den," she observed. "Will we hunt from here?"
"No, little sister," Polgara replied, stirring the small pot of simmering herbs on the fire. "We have things that must be done in another place. Let me have a look at your hurt."